Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show, George Washington Podcast. Well, I was wondering just a few moments ago, I was reading an article about a toxic job. Not a toxic job, a toxic job opportunity? No. Toxic hiring process, right? It was a toxic hiring process. I was just wondering if it's possible that things could just, you know, be bad. Like, they don't have to be toxic. Not everything has to be toxic. That's just me. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm outdated. Maybe I'm just a silly, silly old man with outmoded ideas. Anyways, on this episode, whose intro I'm recording while walking, it's the moment. I speak with real estate expert Tom K, he of the hilarious TikTok / Instagram reels that you all know and love, highlighting great places like Oshawa, Whitby, etc. et al. And then after that, I spoke with my good friend Harry S. I don't know why I said it like that. Harry S. Yeah. And Harry, we talked. What did we talk about? I think we talked a lot about aliens, which was kind of cool, and hierarchy. And just so you know, he drops the C word. So if you don't want to hear that, you're warned now. Anyways, I believe that. So have a wonderful day and enjoy the show.
Doing
Daniel, good. You?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. Feeling good. Ready to talk a bit.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's the podcast setup going so far for you?
It's doing well. It's doing great. It's in the early days, I'll say. So this is kind of a soft launch, but
okay. Right. Are you already live, or are you just like bulking up some episodes before you go live, kind of thing?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit in between. So, like, right now,
okay, right.
I'm putting them up, but I haven't really advertised them yet. And once once I start promoting it, then people will see it. But you know what? Let's just get started right now, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Whenever you're ready.
All right. I'm ready right now. So, what did you want to start with? Do you want to start with, you know what? You're the expert. You're, like, would you say that you're famous, like infamous, like slightly famous?
Mm, Personally, not really. I don't know. I don't feel too famous, but that's okay.
Fair. That's fair.
I mean, depends what your definition of fame is. Maybe infamous, you know, like, yeah, especially with the way I talk about Oshawa and Brampton sometimes.
That's right.
And
yeah. That is what I, like, I note you for highlighting different parts of the GTA outside of the central Toronto area. Like, Oshawa, love Oshawa. You got Markham, Brampton, all the places. So,
absolutely.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is because when someone from outside of the GTA, I mean, the GTA in itself is debatable in how it's defined. Some people say that Hamilton's part of the GTA, which seems absurd, but whatever.
I agree with that. I think, like, the whole GTHA thing is a little bit ridiculous. Like, yeah, to call Hamilton the GTA, I mean, come on, that's, like, Hamilton, such, like, and at the end of the day, too, Hamilton's such a major city, you know, 500,000 people or whatever live there.
Yeah.
You could do the GHA, like, the Greater Hamilton area, right? So include, like, Welland and all those little towns around there.
Yeah, like, and Dundas, Burlington.
There's all those things. Like, Burlington's kind of what I would almost consider the GTA still, but, like, right, once you get into Hamilton, yeah. Like, Burlington is also kind of debatable, but I'd say Oakville, Milton, and then, like, on the northern side of the west end there, probably Brampton, Mississauga, like, you know what I mean? That's kind of GTA to me. Once you get into Burlington, Hamilton, like, that's far. Ajax, absolutely. Like, I mean, Ajax really is only one city apart from Toronto, right? Like, you know what I mean? Pickering's on the border with Scarborough, which Scarborough now, since the amalgamation, is Toronto. So Ajax, absolutely. Even Whitby, like, it gets debatable again on the East End because, like, you know, some people will consider Port Hope and Coburg, like, that's quite far. Like, those are a ways away. I would not consider that the GTA.
Yeah.
Oshawa, too, like, I don't know, it's debatable because it's not really as far as Hamilton, but it's also a pretty major city, and it could kind of be in its own little category.
Yeah, I'm not going to use any technical terms here, but I just think that Oshawa has its own, like, when you go there, it has its own vibe. It doesn't feel, it's a little distinct from what I would call the GTA.
Yeah, to put it in a great quote, when there's like a sign going around the internet with the, like, the Oshawa, like, it's basically like the Oshawa city sign.
Yeah.
But it's created to say one of the nicknames, which is the dirty. She's dirty, but, right? So, yeah, you're right. It's a whole nother vibe.
That's Oshawa, right, yeah. I was trying to it's be tactful, but yeah, that's about right, yeah.
I'll just go out and say it. She's dirty, but she's home.
That's Oshawa. Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'll love the Oshawa. Like, I mean, it's a great place. It's fun. There's always something happening there.
Yeah.
There's lots of sights to see. If you're an avid people watcher like myself, you'll love it there because, again, there's always something to see. Like, you know, you go downtown Oshawa and there's no shortness of entertainment or entertaining things to look at.
Right. So, let's look at the real estate in Toronto versus the surrounding municipalities and towns and cities or whatever you want to call them.
Uh-huh.
What's going on? Because you're hearing that condos, vacancies are going up. People aren't buying them. The Toronto market is having some issues. What's going on here?
So Toronto market's having issues mostly right now in the condo sector because there's a large supply of condos that are, you know, on the market and just they're not moving as hot as they were. And even during COVID, this was also an issue in the Toronto market as well because everybody was obviously, you know, leaving the condo market, selling downtown and moving to places like Oshawa or Burlington or Hamilton or whatever to get some more, like, I guess, nature and just more of that rural, suburban
type space,
vibe.
Just space.
And space. Yeah, space, absolutely, because some of these condos nowadays, man, they're like,
yeah,
we call them shoebox condos, right? Like, some of them are very, very tiny.
Right.
But that being said, like, the Toronto market's having a bit of issues there. The detached market in Toronto is still relatively doing pretty well. There will always be demand for detached properties in Toronto.
Right.
And in my opinion, especially with some of the new rules coming into effect where you can have four family units on one detached residential lot in Toronto.
Right. Yeah,
the fact that they're bringing that in, I think that presents a great opportunity to the right people, like people that have, you know, either developers or contractors or whatever in their network and their repertoire, where they can, you know, leverage these people to convert some of these old single family homes into fourplexes, or, you know, maybe a threeplex with a ADU in the backyard or a laneway home or whatever. Like, there's a lot of opportunity to make money that way right now in Toronto. So I feel the detached market and just like the land in Toronto will always remain relatively high, but it's, again, just the condo factor is kind of drawing things down. Beyond that, like, there's just a lot happening in the background in the current moment that could contribute to things slowing down in that market. So, for instance, you know, with the government raising capital gains tax up to 66.6% the new number is, which I believe it's 66.6, which is kind of satanic. Show you who we're really paying taxes to.
Yeah, no comment on that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But these guys... like, that's going to contribute to a lot of investors wanting to sell before that legislation comes into place.
Right.
Because, you know, like, some of these investors have been sitting on these condos for a long time and some of these properties. So I feel that's going to contribute to a bit of a sell-off in certain areas. And, you know, we all know Toronto condos heavily investor-owned.
Yeah, that's right. But I feel like...
And then,
no, continue.
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say, and then, like, in comparison, you know, some of the outskirt markets, we're in the spring market, so you could contribute it to seasonality, because, like, the market's been pretty hot this year. But from what I'm seeing, like, boots on the ground, compared to last year, some of these, like, Durham Region homes, for instance, are way, way, way more popular and just getting way more attention than they would have last spring market. Although last spring market was pretty good too, but, you know, it was mostly like the fall time last year that things really slowed down and there was some people having issues to sell and what, like, yada, yada, all that stuff. But that being said, you know, like, we were looking at some homes in, to bring back Oshawa into the conversation, east of Oshawa, one city in Clarington. And, like, there was one I can remember that just shows you the market was and is still pretty hot in this current spring market. Like, you know, my clients put in an offer on it and we came in at, like, I believe 840 or 830, something around there. It was a very good offer based on the comparables that recently sold, same style house, not too far off, same, you know, quote unquote neighborhood / city, Bowmanville. Like, it's debatable because Clarington, much like Toronto, amalgamated and kind of combined a bunch of cities into one.
Right.
But, you know, they were in Bowmanville and we put an offer which made sense at about 830 or 840, something along these lines. And then somebody came in with an offer at like 910 and we weren't even competing. This was what we call in the industry a preemptive offer situation. So the house hit the market for maybe a day, maybe two, and somebody put in an offer before us. We went, looked at the property the same day, basically, like, as soon as we were done looking at it, my first task was to drive back to the office and draft up an offer for it. And again, we're coming in at like 8:30, 8:40, and these guys outbid us at 9:10. And, you know, to put it in perspective how crazy this is, nothing else in that pocket sold anywhere remotely close to that. Like, everything in that style of house, single family detached with one garage, like a one car garage, you know, average subdivision type lot, everything else was selling 800 to 850 max. So we were in the right range. But then these guys come in at 910 and just take the property. I guess they really, really wanted it.
Wow.
And to kind of put things in perspective, the same week, another home, not in the same neighborhood, but a little bit down the street, like no more than a 5 to 10 minute drive. Same thing, single family detached, but this one was a two car garage. So I had an extra, you know, space in the garage.
Yeah.
It was much bigger, additional bedroom. So the, like it was a four bedroom versus a three, and it was much bigger, like at least 2 to 2,500 square feet.
Right.
And the one, you know, we put in an offer at 830, 840 was about, I want to say like a 1,500 square foot home. And the bigger one sold for only 5,000 more at 915 versus 910 for the other one. So there's some irrationality coming back into the market, unfortunately. And, you know, as somebody who likes to think of themselves as somewhat of a rational and logical, reasonable person, I do not like seeing this kind of stuff because irrationality in markets leads to bubbles, and we don't want to see bubbles because that's how people get burnt, and that's how, you know, you get into these situations where people buy houses they can't really afford, like on paper, but they can just because they're qualified for a mortgage. And, you know, like I'm the type of realtor, I'll really sit down with clients and I'll tell them, hey, you, like, you know, your budget is okay. Sure. Your budget might be up to 900,000 or whatever, but you know, you're a family with one kid, just two of you and a kid or a dog or whatever. Do you guys really need to be going up to 900 and getting that three or four bed home? Like wouldn't just a little bit of a smaller three bed, maybe a townhome, maybe a semi, something like that, right? Like, don't extend your budget. Don't over leverage yourself. Because again, like there's a lot of, unfortunately in my industry, a lot of people that push FOMO tactics, and nobody benefits from FOMO because it's just, it leads to bad situations, right? Like, so, you know, we've seen it over the past couple of years. February 2022 was the peak of the Greater Toronto Area real estate market. And I would actually extend that to probably the peak of the entire market, like in Canada and the US for the most part, minus a couple places that are really hot. Like Calgary since then is still up because, you know, everybody wants to emigrate to Calgary, and it's a pretty hot market over there.
I heard it's insane. It's crazy.
Yeah. Calgary's booming, and rightfully so. Housing there is still somewhat affordable. Like, the way I look at Calgary, right? So we sold a bit of pre-construction in Calgary in the past couple of years, and the way I liken it to people is like, okay, hey, Daniel, like, name me the top five cities in Canada. Vancouver, Toronto's going to come in at number one.
Yeah.
Right? Debatable. If you're from Toronto, you're probably going to say Toronto is number one.
Toronto
is
number one. Vancouver is not number one. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Vancouver. But
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everybody else and even all my friends here in the Greater Toronto Area. You guys are going to hate me, but to me, Montreal is the number one city in Canada. I love that place.
Montreal is a great place. I agree. But it's Toronto is Toronto. It's the center of Canada. It's the mover and shaken capital. Like, Montreal is kind of like more laid back, more like, if you want to just like, again, with the vibes, but it's all about vibes. It's got better vibes. It's like more fun there.
Yeah.
But Toronto is,
yeah,
like,
I don't know.
It feels like,
I get it.
Yeah.
But there's just something about Montreal that like just draws a personal connection to me. I love the city. I love the people. I don't love the drivers, but I love the, like, the adaptability my mind has. Like, so I could drive 5 hours to Montreal, Quebec, whatever, driving perfectly normal and sane. But the moment I cross city limits into Montreal,
right,
my brain, like, there's a switch that just flicks, and it's like, okay, now Tom's a Montreal driver, and I just adapt in. But I don't enjoy that factor, but I love how that kind of works, that as soon as I touch that city, it's like, okay, now I got to drive like these guys.
Right. It's just like survival.
Because, you know, if you don't drive like a Montreal person when you're in Montreal, they'll bully you on the road. Like they'll cut you off. You'll get nowhere. So you have to adapt and overcome their style of driving. But again, to me, no matter what, like, I think that's probably my number one city in Canada. Like, I'm even as far, I love it so much that I'm on day, I want to say like 154 of Duolingo French, so that I can one day hopefully move to Montreal and actually speak the language of the people there.
Okay.
Because that's like, if it wasn't for the French aspect of that city, I'd probably already be living there, to be honest.
I'll hook you up with some tips to learn French after this.
Amazing.
Okay.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, all right. I will give it to you just for the purposes of this discussion. One, Montreal. Two, Toronto.
Thank you. Thank you.
Three, Vancouver. Three. Four, what would you put as number four?
Calgary.
So there you go. Okay. So top right. five. Yeah, so I would put Calgary as number four as well.
Maybe Ottawa, but I mean, who really likes Ottawa?
I have a soft spot for Ottawa, but it is a very boring town.
Absolutely. Exactly. So, you know, maybe like you throw in Edmonton or like, I don't know. I don't really know the name, like St. John's or Halifax or... Yeah. Some of those like eastern cities, if you want to throw those into the mix. But you know what I mean? Like, as soon as you start trying to think of what are the top five cities in this country, Calgary is definitely a contender for being in that list. And that's why I say rightfully so that their real estate market is booming, because it's a growing city. There's a lot of benefits to live there.
And there's jobs, right? But, and there's,
yeah, the government's a little... The government's a bit better in terms of like taxation and stuff like that.
Right.
So, you know, for instance, when you, like when you purchase a home in Calgary, there's no provincial tax. Like, it's just the federal. That's all you owe. You don't have to pay the provincial tax. Like, we're talking about new builds here.
Right.
You know, there's no land transfer tax.
Right.
If you're a landlord and somebody doesn't pay you rent in Calgary or in Alberta in whole, it's a lot easier to evict that tenant for non-payment of rent versus trying to do that here in Ontario, where you're going to be waiting at least a year for your landlord-tenant board hearing. And then, you know, it's a whole bureaucracy nightmare here in Ontario.
It's insane. They don't even have enough people to adjudicate the cases. It's crazy.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, you know, that's why I'm very hopeful on this AI thing, because once we get AI, like the Ontario Landlord Tenant Board is a prime example of one of the quote unquote businesses or organizations in this world that could really benefit from having AI help, you know, relieve some of the backlog that they have.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, Calgary is booming. You were talking about this sale. You were talking about irrationality in the market, perhaps coming back. What do you? Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because people have gotten used to the heightened interest rates?
I think it's just a combination of factors. I feel that right now the market is doing like somewhat well again because of people, yes, getting used to heightened interest rates. But when it comes to irrationality in markets, it's just psychology 101. There's, I forget the exact saying, but it's something about like the madness of people in groups, right? So like, it's kind of like that groupthink way just, you know, oh, hey, everybody else is paying $100,000 over ask. Why shouldn't I? You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. And I think it just kind of goes into the fact that people like, some of it is people maybe just really want a home. Like, so for instance, the one we're talking about, for all I know, the people that beat out our offer, they could have been downsizers from a market like Toronto, where, you know, it might be an old couple. Maybe they sold a house for $4 or $5 million in Toronto. And, you know, to secure a house in Bowmanville, they're like, okay, well, we'll pay 9-10 because we're still putting $4 or $5 million in the bank, whatever, right? You know, so there are certain case by case aspects of things like that where you just don't necessarily know exactly who's bidding or why, what their motivations are, right? Maybe, you know, maybe that street they have a family member that lives there and they really, really want to live there. So, like, in that particular case, there could be a range of factors. But, like, for the most part, when it comes to irrationality in the markets, it's just a lot of, you know, the chaos and the madness of people in groups just kind of following along with trends. And then beyond that as well, I'm just going to say it, there's a lot of shitty realtors in my industry that will use FOMO tactics. And, you know, we have a phrase for it. A lot of these guys, they just have commission breath.
Yeah,
where, you know, you talk to them and you can smell it on their breath. Like, they're just hungry for that next check. They're not treating the business how it should be treated.
Right.
So, like, for instance, the way I think of this business, it's not about, like, okay, Daniel, you come to me today.
Right.
And, you know, you want to purchase a home or a condo or whatever through me. I will work with you for as long as it takes until we find the right home in the right area at the right price for you, because I want to service my clients to a level where, you know, they're happy to refer me to family and friends, and you're just left with a good taste in your mouth after the whole experience, versus, you know, just
like volume
being like, hey, let's just get you a home right now. Just overbid 20 or 30K over whatever a rational number would be, and we'll secure this home for you. Because again, that's kind of like commission breath. And then there's a lot of realtors that'll push stupid FOMO tactics like, oh, you guys know interest rates are gonna go back down, right? Like, so for instance, for the last half a year from a lot of my colleagues, all I've been hearing is interest rates are coming back down. And then I ask them and I'm like, you know, why are they coming back down? And they're like, because they have to. Like, there's no logic or nothing reasonable to what some of these people say. So I feel shitty realtors also contribute to bubbles and just, you know, ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
So even, for instance, like, you know, what's the old saying? It's like jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
I have my very few specific markets that I work in. So, for instance, all of the Durham region, a little bit of York, mostly like Markham through Richmond Hill and then Vaughan. I don't really touch like north of that or west of that.
Right.
And then Toronto. So, you know, I have my, like, I've niched down to a pretty wide range. Like, at this point, I could probably even just go all Durham region if I really wanted to.
Right.
But I do have some love for some of those other cities. Like, Markham, I love Markham despite the slow drivers that'll do under the speed limit in the left lane. Like, I love that city.
Yeah.
Richmond Hill, I mean, it's just, there's money in Richmond Hill, let's be honest. Nobody gets into the world of real estate for, like, we all have our reasons, but at the end of the day, everybody in my industry, like, you know, to quote one of my favorite documentaries, Idiocracy, I like money.
Yeah, and right.
You know, like, Richmond Hill's just, there's money there. And then Vaughan, I love Vaughan. I do. Vaughan's a great area. And so, you know, I've niched down to my certain markets where, like, I know what a house in Pickering versus a house in Markham versus a house in Vaughan should be going for, just based on taking a quick look, because I'm following the MLS data and following the markets, right? So, like, I'll go shopping with clients and they'll tell me, like, hey, what do you think it's worth? Like, you know, and if we're going into an offer situation, I'll never just go off of a feeling or what my mind thinks. I will legitimately go into the MLS, break down the comparables and find them what sold that's, you know, as close to that property as possible. Mm-hmm. But that being said, like, majority of the times when I look at MLS, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, my knowledge game's pretty up there because I'm aware of what, like, you know, what's selling for what. So the biggest problem for me is, like, when you got the realtors that they want to do business everywhere. They'll drive 3 hours to sell you a house. Like, that's just desperate and thirsty.
Right. Yeah.
And that, I also feel there's a bit of that contributes to some of these properties selling at ridiculous valuations, because if you're not working in a market, you know, like, on the selling side, I love when agents like that bring me offers, because you can just be a shark. Like, you can show them a more posh or more bougie area and be like, hey, here's some comparables we're looking at. Show these to your clients.
Yeah.
And again, if they don't know the area, they might see a single family detached somewhere in Oshawa that's not like Poshawa, the north side.
Right.
Where, you know, it's not as pricey, and they'll be like, oh yeah, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. I mean, it's in Oshawa, right? But, you know, real estate, very specifically location-based, right? Like, so, for instance, Rosedale, you go down the street from Rosedale, you're basically in the hood. Like, you know what I mean? It's block by block, street by street, neighborhood by neighborhood that these valuations need to come from. So I feel, unfortunately, there's many in my industry that also contribute to all of these kind of things happening.
Well, I mean, like, as you said, I like money. There's a lot of people who like money out there.
Yes.
And
I like money, but I like my values more, right?
Exactly.
Again, you know, but like, let's be real here, Daniel. I like money. I do. But like, how do you get money? It's not from doing one deal. It's from servicing your clients so well that, you know, their family, their friends, everybody in their circle is going to ask them, hey, you know, you got a pretty good price on your home. Who'd you use? Right. Or, you know, like they'll get it out in conversation naturally. Like, you know, you might have one of your clients at a Christmas dinner or something talking to their family and being like, oh, you know, we just bought a house. And then, you know, the conversation might turn to real estate and they might say, oh, yeah, we're thinking about selling and moving to X or B or whatever location. And, you know, like that kind of natural referral and the repeat aspect of real estate is really where you make the big bucks. And this is like, I'm still relatively new to the industry, you know, like I think I'm about 3 years in at this point, right. But from a lot of the heavy hitter old timers I've met and talked to, they all say just service your clients and go for that repeat and referral business, right? Because again, you know, if you're left with a bad taste in your mouth, you're never going to use that realtor again. Like the I like money guys,
the real,
you know, from the documentary, I like money. Like those type of guys, the ones that, you know, rip off their clients and do silly things, those guys will never, ever get business from those people again. They won't be referred. And some of them are lucky if they don't get sued because, you know, some of the stuff that's been going on in this industry needs to change, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And to expand on that, it's basically, sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought on this. I thought I had a point, but I guess I don't.
It's all right.
A lot of talking, man. A lot going on.
No, I can understand where you're coming from. I mean, it's always just easier to build relationships with people and be able to. The proof is in the doing, right? When someone can see that you have the skill to do it, then there you go. You can't buy ads. You can't buy like billboards to prove that, really.
Right.
And
the doing, and like, you know, to be a competent realtor is one thing, but to be trustworthy and, you know, have the people really feel like you're on their team, because as a realtor, literally by legal definition of all the contracts that we sign is like, you know, when I'm your realtor, whatever your fiduciary interests are my fiduciary interests, right? So, like, I can't put my interests above yours. And some realtors will truly do this, while others may not, right? So I think it's beyond just the fact of being a confident agent and doing things. It's about caring and showing your clients that, hey, you know, I'm really on your team here. Like, you know, we're not in this as... you're not just another sale to me. You are literally like part of my family at this point, because we're riding till the end. Like we're like, you know, there's clients I have that I know in 10 years from now, they're not going to be considering other agents. Like they're coming back to me. Right. Yeah. And then even beyond that, there's, you know, I have clients that come to me sometimes and like, I'll ask them, so why didn't you use your last agent again? And they're like, oh, you know, they were great, but they didn't really keep in touch, or they didn't really, like, we didn't really feel like we were cared about, right? So real estate, again, there's a lot of psychology here and a lot of, like, it's a lot like dating in a way. Like, you're almost like dating your clients sometimes, where you gotta just, you know what I mean? Like, if they don't feel taken care of, safe, secure, and all that with you, why would they stick around, right? So, like, you know, again, some of the clients I had, like, that told me, hey, my other agent just didn't do a good job of keeping in touch. Or every time we tried to just even, like, have a basic message with them, whatever, like on Instagram or social media, you know, maybe replying to a story, something like that, that realtor didn't really seem to just have that care aspect there or want to engage in those conversations because, you know, that person's not really ready to buy or sell at the moment. They're just more so looking for a friend or somebody to just converse with.
Right, yeah.
So I think, again, you know, it's a lot about, it's beyond the competent agent or the competent, you know, negotiation skills or anything like that. Real estate is 100% a relationship-based business. So if you're not good at building relationships, don't even bother. It's not for you.
All right. Okay. So let's move on to some other topics just quickly.
Yep. Sounds
good. We were talking about building relationships. It looks like Canada needs to build its productivity. The deputy of the Bank of Canada recently said that productivity has reached an emergency level. And I mean, Canada has always famously had lower productivity levels than the United States. And I am just wondering what you think is causing this and what we can do and how is it affecting the economy at large?
Okay,
what are
so
your
we're
thoughts?
Getting into a very, okay, so we're getting into a, I'm just going to preface this part of the conversation by saying we're getting into a very, like, economist type of conversation. Right. And, you know, as a realtor, I do follow economics and the, like, you know, micro and macro trends around the world somewhat.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I'm like a well-versed expert on these things, but I can give some thoughts absolutely on stuff like this. I just want to, you know, give that disclaimer and be honest with your listeners, because I don't want to come off as, you know, claiming to be or somebody being like, oh, this Tom guy thinks he knows everything. I don't.
That's true. I want to just say, I'll let you continue, but I'll say that I have you on because specifically because we're in Canada, and real estate is a large part of our economy. So I feel like
absolutely
from if we were in a different country, I may not have you talk about the economy, but since we're here, might as well. You obviously would have to know something about it.
I agree. And I think that leads to a great point that you're making here, where I think, in my opinion, as a realtor, I love that our country is, like, you know, very heavily reliant on real estate and the surrounding kind of economic factors that come from it. So whether it's on the building side, you know, so you give all the work to contractors, tradespeople, all that, I think it's great. And, you know, again, I like money, so it puts money in my pocket by being like that.
Right.
But I think our economy is far too dependent on the real estate side of things to the point where it's almost not healthy because we're not very diversified, right? So if you talk to most good financial advisors, like investment type people, they'll say you want to have at least somewhat of a diversification of your, like, portfolio. You never want to go all in on one stock or one sector.
Right.
That seems like that's what Canada's done. And sadly, that can end very badly. So, like, if you think productivity is bad now, imagine what this country would look like if, you know, we had a major real estate market meltdown.
Right.
It would not be pretty here. So I think, first of all, that's just one aspect of, you know, kind of why things are the way they are in this country. And I'm sure, like, over the last couple of years, it's like those numbers that, you know, we're seeing on productivity, probably, if I had to guess, from 2022 to 2024, they went down a bit just because of a little bit of that like slowdown in the real estate market that has happened since the peak of this crazy COVID mania we were in previously. Right. And the other thing I'll say, just in terms of like Canada and what I think may be contributing to some of these problems. So in my opinion, a major, major issue we have in this country is like the whole brain drain thing where, you know, if you're a very competent tech sector worker, and you can go and get an H1 or H1N or whatever the visa is in America.
H1B. Is it
H1B or H1N, whatever the visa is that you can get in America to go and become a worker there, right? So, like, you know, why would you stay in Canada where salaries are lower and, you know, you don't get the same salary. So, like, a software developer in Toronto versus a software developer in somewhere like Texas or San Francisco, I get that, you know, the Bay Area, like, the whole tech area, Silicon Valley. Sure, real estate's just as expensive there, but for other industries, for other aspects of, you know, like jobs.
Right.
If you can spend less money and get paid more, like, why would you stay in Canada? Yeah. Would you? Like, okay, if somebody told you today, hey, I'll pay you 40% more, I'll bring you into the States, and you can live for 40% cheaper.
Right, exactly.
Why would you stay in Canada? Do you know what I mean? So I think that also contributes to things. Which, yeah, it's like those would be two areas where I say we probably are lacking.
Okay, so two that I would say, the first one, just jumping off what you said, I would say that a big issue as well is not only are we having brain drain because of like tech workers, et cetera, healthcare workers, you can make more money in the States as well as other countries, like entrepreneurship, people who work for themselves, the tax system here,
Oh, bingo. Actually, you know what? What am I talking about? That's right. You're leading on to another big point.
Yeah.
This country is literally designed to drain every last penny out of you through taxes to the point where, being an entrepreneur in Canada, it's not as easy as it is in the States. And
if you're an entrepreneur, continue.
Yeah. And circling back to even an earlier conversation that was completely unrelated when we were talking real estate, you know, the whole capital gains tax.
Yeah.
Not only is it bad for entrepreneurship, but it's bad for investment. Like, you know, who wants to come in and invest in a country where you're just going to get all your profits taxed away? So I agree. I think that's a great point, Daniel, that yes, this country is designed to quote unquote punish the rich, even though, you know, the real rich, it doesn't punish them at all because they're all, you know, through multiple trusts, multiple holding companies, you know, profits go to Belize or Seychelles or the British Virgin Islands, whatever, and then funnel through all these holding companies and corporations. So it's really just, this country is designed to tax the shit out of the upper middle class.
Right, exactly, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about that.
Yeah, the upper middle class, they're like the boogeyman that the government uses. Of course, like a person, I'm not going to get political or anything, don't worry, everybody. But like a person like, let's say, the current prime minister, he has always lived in this the class above what a lot of people, like people who are in the middle or lower middle class, lower classes would say are rich people. Like he lives above that. That's what I would consider like a high wealthy class individual, right? And they'll never feel any of the effects of these taxes. Like we're seeing now that these capital gains taxes are actually, they're affecting, because they affect investment, as you said, they affect the dividends people get on their stocks. So retirees will not be getting as much in their portfolios that they use for their retirement. It's crazy. It's like I will end this political rant quickly, but I just, it's kind of crazy that the government that you expect to be competent does not see all of these unintended consequences coming. Like, they don't see it. They think it's just an easy way out to try and just tax people more because they're quote unquote wealthy. And then,
yep. I'll just add it on one thing. I don't want to get too political either.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying, yes, they don't see the consequences. What really is happening with all these new taxes and everything, it's just a funny way of the budget balancing itself.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great place to end that kind of political rant.
Right, exactly. But the other thing with productivity, the second thing I want to get your view on this is I feel that a lot of it is, it kind of dovetails into what you're saying, what we were just talking about, is when the government spends on services. So if you look at the GDP numbers, a lot of the growth in GDP has been through jobs for people in the public sector. So just by definition, jobs in the public sector they don't add to productivity because they're not, they're just servicing, they're negative productivity because they just work for the government. They're not creating any wealth, right? So if we live in a country where we're goosing our GDP numbers with people working in the public sector, and it's just creating more red tape, we're creating more people who have, like, the thing that gets my goat about it is that I went to Service Canada to renew my passport, and the service was not any better. It was, if anything, it was like a little bit worse than the last time I went. So how do we have all these new people working in the public sector and it doesn't seem to be getting any better?
That's a good question. I wish I had an answer for why, but I mean, I don't know. It's kind of pathetic, but again, you know, I think one point you hit on really, really well there is the fact that in this country, the red tape and just the bureaucracy of it all,
yeah,
it does stifle things. Again, you know, this country is not the most friendly towards entrepreneurship or, you know, even like to bring it, circle this conversation back to real estate.
Yeah.
You know, if you removed some of these restrictions in terms of, you know, development fees and all these fees that cities charge the builder, like when you buy a new condo in the city of Toronto,
yeah,
a lot of that price is just baked in development fees that the city will charge these builders. And then they obviously, you know, no builders in it for charity. They're not going to be paying your development fees to the city and then just calling it a day. Like, that just gets baked onto your purchase price. So, you know, if you removed a lot of this red tape and a lot of these quote unquote like development fees and just the taxes on building and, you know, you need this permit, that permit, this survey, this, that study, like all of the bureaucracy and all that, that definitely does not help. And it stifles certain industries and like growth in certain areas for sure in this country.
Yeah. I agree 100%. The last thing, I'll button this up by saying this. The messed up thing about those city development charges is that they can't even, like, I think of specifically one that came about in Toronto pretty recently, not like super recently, but it's one I can remember, the land transfer tax. Like, they didn't even pretend that that had any actual value except for just creating more revenue for the city. Like, it doesn't have...
It literally... That's literally all it is.
That really is just like they literally said it was just a tax grab. It's crazy. Okay, so let's move on to this final topic that I wanted to end off on. A nice kind of divergent topic. So I don't know if you heard about this, but there was an RBC CFO, Nadine Ahn. And she was terminated because she was having a secret relationship with one of her underlings. I shouldn't really call him an underling because he's a pretty successful guy in his own right. But apparently there seemed to be some favoritism, and someone put in a secret call to a tip line within the internal tip line in the bank to let it be known that this guy was getting favorable promotions, etc. about it.
Yep.
So I want to just jump off on this and ask, how do you feel about workplace relationships? Or like working and relationships in general.
In general?
Yeah.
I would say it's a very, for me and my personal way of looking at things, I would say don't shit where you eat.
That's where I was just thinking that, yeah. It's
you know, like that's
game.
Literally where my mind goes when it comes to that. Don't shit where you eat. You know, that's basically it. I wouldn't get into that. I wouldn't really want to. Like, I mean, I understand, you know, you work with people, you see them, you know, like, let's say you're in an office and you see somebody every day, 5 days a week, you know, feelings can develop and conversations can turn well. You know, I'm not totally against it, but personally, I'd say, don't shit where you eat. And that's basically it.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. So first of all, it's finance, so whatever you think about finance, it's a job where you're working. It's a very intense job, like, because there's a lot of money on the line, and you're working a lot of hours, a lot of, like, you're not being paid. You're being paid very well, but it's not like you're getting overtime. It's just like you're expected to be working long hours.
Yep.
You don't see your family. You don't really have outside relationships. And then the other thing is that, like, the workplace used to be one of the major places where people found their future spouse. So if we're just putting that off limits, I do feel like it is off limits at this point. But, like, if we're doing that, then how are people supposed to meet each other if they're working all the time?
Tinder. Bumble. We're in a new age, Daniel. Nobody dates in the office no more. That's for the boomers, man. Come on, get with the times.
Tinder is a scam, man.
Bumble. I agree.
Did you hear that Bumble is making it so guys can make the first move now because women don't do anything?
I believe it. That's actually quite funny, but yes, I believe that that's a thing. I always thought that was cute about Bumble, where, you know, it kind of puts the ball in the ladies' court, but whatever. I guess they don't want to be the first. Like, they're now learning what it's like to be a man on Tinder, I guess, you know, when you got to make that first move.
Exactly.
And it's not always the easiest thing to do, is it? Especially when, like, you know, it could be a guy that has nothing in his bio and she's like, well, like, what do I say? Like, I got three pictures and one sentence to work off. Like, how do you come up with a clever first message off that, right? So, yeah, I guess it makes sense where they're switching their model to that. But, I don't know. I'm not too into the online dating apps anymore, thankfully.
I don't think that... I think a problem as well is that women don't have or don't need, usually in life, what we call... Well, not me, but... what the youths call Riz. They don't need it.
Yes.
Right.
No.
Okay.
Women are supposed to be Riz.
That's right. Exactly. There you go. So
they're not supposed to be doing the Rizzing.
That's right.
And, you know, like, I agree with that. I don't think, I think at the end of the day, like, most women want a man that can somewhat lead and take control and say, hey, you know, here I am, let's go on a date, let's do this, whatever, right? Like, you know, and especially, like, to me, one of the saddest things about the way society's kind of progressed, where, you know, all this cancel culture and all this, like, stuff has led to men don't even want to approach women on the street anymore for fears, whatever rational fears they may be, that, you know, Like, they may get called a creep, or they may get filmed on video and quote-unquote canceled for, like, catcalling, which it's really not. It's just starting a conversation and talking to a person and being like, hey, you know, I think you're cute. I think you're this. Can I get your number? Can we go on a date? Can we just whatever, right? And I think that's, you know, just like you said, like, if there's no longer relationships happening in the workplace and everybody's being moved online, it's quite sad. But I think inevitably and unfortunately, the future of relationships is probably going to be like AI girlfriends and AI boyfriends.
That's so
like,
sad.
Sadly, kind of where it feels like society will go one day.
No, they'll probably things will get so bad that the government will make a department and will just like match us up.
State enforced relationships.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Okay. On that note, did you want to? Go ahead.
Actually, as dystopian as that sounds, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. Like that's actually quite sad, but yeah, that might be in our cards in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Like,
kind of reminds me to hold my girlfriend a little tighter and keep her close. Cause I do not want to,
you don't want to go back into that world. No,
I don't want a state appointed girlfriend.
Right.
For all we know, they might be spies or you know what I
mean?
Right. Like, oh, here's your new girlfriend, new boyfriend. They're just spies to keep track of you.
Yeah, that's right.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Make sure you pay your taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
On that note,
bad about the party, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Did you want to say anything else before we sign off? Say goodbye.
Shout out to Oshawa, shout out to Brampton, shout out to Markham, and don't overpay, gettom.ca if you want to buy real estate in the greater Toronto area.
Let's go, baby.
I hope we can have another one of these conversations at some point in the future as well.
Of course. Okay, it's been a pleasure, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Likewise, brother. Congratulations on the new podcast, man. Love to see it.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Take care. Have a nice day. Hello.
Hi, Harry.
Yeah. Daniel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, what's up?
Oh, well, didn't you just call me?
I did, yeah. I saw that you called and that
I called. Phone just,
you go first.
Yeah, I was in the basement in my room.
Right.
And the phone rang upstairs where I was charging it. And I'm an old guy, so it takes me a minute to get the cat off my lap and get up the stairs.
That's fair. That is absolutely fair.
And I felt bad. And I felt really bad that I had missed your call, but my phone was nearly dead, so I had to charge it.
Ah, okay. That's no problem. Yeah. That's fine.
You know, so here I am, and I'm all fed and watered and relaxing now. I turn off this. I'm listening to a sci-fi audiobook.
Oh, which one?
It's called We Sent the Aliens an Uno Game.
So that
they would hit each. Yeah, it's basically a science fiction story about a guy, a psychology going for a doctorate.
Right.
And he's interested in aliens and stuff. And so he tries to volunteer for all these exchange programs, but he doesn't qualify. So he's quite unhappy, but he's getting his life on track.
Right.
And then he gets reassessed because he's pretty smart after all. And he's greeting alien refugees who are arriving at Earth. There are 1 million of them coming because they declared a genocidal war against humanity, and humanity beat them. And the guys that were running the alien society decided that they would nuke their own world rather than let the humans have it, and that meant they expected everybody else to die with them.
Wow.
And so he's so all these traumatized aliens that are cute and fuzzy are landing, and they're actually taking care of him because he was so dedicated that he worked for 36 hours without a break and ended up collapsing from heat prostration. And so I just you phoned just as he was waking up in the refugee camp in a tent.
That's fascinating. May I ask you a question?
Sure.
Just because I've been reading something kind of related to that. What do you feel, how do you feel about extraterrestrials in general?
Well, in general, I suspect that if there is a God, he's actually just another guy, another alien. So to me, there are no gods. They're just aliens, and we haven't met them yet. And if we, I don't believe that they're around. I don't think they're walking among us, and they had nothing to do with the fucking pyramids.
Right.
But, you know, the universe is never sending me messages. It's right. Just, you know, it's just the place that we happen to be lucky enough to land on and have life and consciousness and sentience.
Right.
So, and I suspect that the place is so fucking big that there's got to be just countless, countless life forms out there. Countless. Because look at how lush Earth is. You know, it's a death world. It's always trying to kill us.
Right.
And we weren't equipped to become the apex predators. We don't have teeth and claws.
Yeah.
And we were prey, and we had we ended up dominating without having teeth and claws, which, you know, makes us amazingly dangerous creatures. If you think about it, because what if some life forms that are based all on photosynthesis and not on nitrogen carbon exchange?
Right. Well, like, isn't that the whole like Adam and Eve parable? Where
I don't know about the Adam and Eve thing.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, you don't know.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know.
I'm not saying it's true or false. I'm just saying, like, that's the idea of intelligence causing inequity and disharmony in the world.
Mm.
Like setting off a chain of events that. Before intelligence, like humans could live in harmony with nature, right? And like that's the parable of Adam and Eve, right?
Well, I suppose you could say that in a sense, but that's when we were merely prey,
right? Interesting. Okay. Were you going to say something else? I didn't want to cut you off.
It is pursuant to that. But let me think for a second, because it wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
I really like anthropology and paleoanthropology,
right,
very much.
Right.
I watch at least one documentary a day or a night that includes something about the one last night was a 45-minute one on Cro-Magnon.
Right.
You know, and but I also like nature videos, and I think that people are absolutely completely in touch with our nature,
yeah,
as creatures of Earth, and the Earth being a death world.
Right.
Because if you ever saw the documentary about that square meter of somebody's front lawn.
Mm, I have not.
And the fucking carnage going on.
Right.
With the bugs eating each other alive, and the worms and the spiders and the centipedes and the fungi and the mushrooms and everything. And it's just a fucking seething mass of life and death.
That's right.
It's just endless. It's just a bloodbath. And that's what we are. We are that. We've evolved on a death world, and we started out as prey.
Well,
and now we run the show, and you're saying, you know, intelligence got us this this social Darwinism thing. And that's a sad thing, that because there's too much truth to the idea and competitive stuff and hierarchies.
Right.
And I think it's hierarchies that are going to kill us.
Mm. How so?
Because they're going to, the ones at the very top have too many vested interests in keeping things going and fuck the rest of us. That's why they have world wars. That's why they, you know, that's why, you know, like, you know, if the Krupp family are still owners of the Krupp Industries, IG Farben is still owned by the same German family, and they made Zyklon B.
Right.
Ford produced one third of Hitler's mechanized Blitzkrieg vehicles.
Yeah, it is.
As
it
did
is
General
crazy.
Motors.
Yeah.
And on top of that, at the end of World War II, both GM and Ford sued the U.S. government for damage to their factories from the bombing, and won.
They won.
Damn. They won this lawsuit against their own government for bombing the factories that they were making tanks to kill American soldiers with.
That's crazy. That's a fascinating people. Fact.
That's human.
Wow.
That's human. Donald Trump is the quintessential worst of us. And it's not hard to be better than that. But we're a bunch of fucking monsters, and somehow at the same time, we love each other and care for each other. So we live in this constant tug between our baser nature that's always wants the easy way and no responsibility or accountability. And then the other part of us is the part that cares about morals and ethics and values and principles.
Yeah, it's we are complicated creatures indeed.
Indeed, yeah. And to me, that simple equation is absolutely complicated by things like unresolved childhood traumas and disempowerment and fascist governments and abusive interactions with other people, both being both perpetrators and victims.
So, it doesn't seem like it, but do you believe in like a collective unconscious?
Yeah. I look at those people, and no matter how alien they are from me, they've got the similar dreams and hopes. And although I understand, according to theory now, only one third of people that do not have an internal dialogue.
Yeah, when I learned that, that blew my mind.
Yeah, and I don't know what to do with that little factoid. I don't know whether I would like that or not. Certainly, I overtalk to myself, and I overthink, and I often overtalk to myself using other people's voices, and they're not mine, and they never loved me.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I find that crazy because some people have no internal dialogue. Like sometimes I have multiple dialogues.
Yeah, well, I'm a little ADHD, I'm a little PTSD, I'm a little OCD, a little of this, a little of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, in around 40 years of therapy.
Right.
And now I meditate and think about this shit all the time.
Yeah.
Because I figure that if Trump wins again, then it'll be 50-50 that the whole planet self-immolates.
Do you think he'll win? How do you feel about
the election? I didn't think he'd win the first time. I didn't think that anyone so base would normalize such baseness to such a degree that people have been gaslit into reality changing for them.
Well, I think a lot of it as well is just the political system, especially in the United States, is really advantageous for him. So the first time that he ran, they had like 12 candidates, and just because of his name recognition, he was quickly shot up to the top. And when you're voting on a president, you're not like a large percentage of the people who are voting for someone are just sorting themselves to either the blue team or the red team, right? And then
to a certain degree, I think completely. However, I want to toss a little thing into that is that they prefer gunslingers to guys who think.
I think that's true as well. Like the perception of I mean, like, I've always thought that we, in other professions where we there's a lot at stake for someone, like a lawyer or a accountant or I guess real estate agent or something, you don't want someone who's flashy. You want someone who seems competent and knows what they're doing and is not not actually that exciting. But it's because of having to sell yourself to the public, those people they self-select themselves out to not go into politics, and instead you get people who are exciting and interesting and people want to hang out with them, but they're not necessarily good at what is theoretically supposed to be their job.
I think that's pretty common all the way through all of our recorded history too.
Yeah,
it's the schmoozers. It's the schmoozers. You know,
exactly.
You know, it's not who, but you know, it's who you blow.
Yeah.
And you know, and as a self-employed person, I'm constantly selling myself.
Right. Yeah. You have to.
it's hard to not be a people pleaser,
right,
when your whole fucking livelihood depends on pleasing people.
Yeah.
So I'd like to set a weird tightrope where I want to have good boundaries and my privacy, the parts of me that I cherish are sacred and not available for anybody to poke at or prod at or even look at unless I invite them.
Yeah, it's kind of scary because the whole world seems to be going that way. Like, generally, people are being turned into brands, and you're learning about people more from, like, the internet before you meet them in person.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, employers will look at that. Prospective mates will look at that. Just, it's a, like, weird-ass world.
It is. And the thing is, though, is that my romantic history would have been a lot better if I'd have been able to do any kind of research on any of the cunts I ended up with.
Yeah.
You know, so I made uninformed choices and ended up doing a repetitive neurotic relationship cycle.
Yeah, that's right.
Over and over the fucking again.
Yeah.
You know, but when you talk about trends, generally my generation looked at was taught by the psychology establishment institution type of thing that the depression was the main mental health issue of the entire planet. The general, you know, it was more common than any place anything else. It's depression.
Yeah,
and now. It's been changed in the 21st century to narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah,
and it's fueled by social media, which is probably the first time that tech is being involved in a health issue.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Although, you know, lots of people die in car crashes and plane crashes and ships sinking, because that's also tech killing you, right?
Right, exactly.
As well as the bullet, as is the bullet, which is just a rock.
That's right, a rock moving super fast and heated.
Yeah, a pointy one, you know, a pointy rock that goes super fast. But that's all it is, it's a projectile weapon.
Yeah.
You know, and now we've got, now they're working on energy weapons.
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised they're not going for rail guns, because those things are theoretically even go through a Klingon battle cruiser shield.
Yeah.
You know, like a rail gun off another ship. It's like this ultimate sabot.
I can't remember. Obviously, I saw it on YouTube, but there was a channel that made a rail gun. Like,
The Americans had a working model.
Wow.
And it's astonishing to watch. I mean, it goes through a million plates of steel, you know, like just right. boom, like it's faster than fast. It's right. astonishing, but it takes a whack of energy.
That's what
and,
I was about to say. Yeah.
And it seems to take a fair bit of space. So it would be the sort of thing that you want to mount on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, indeed. Or as you were saying, like a spaceship. Yeah, a starship. Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
so...
Because if we go out there, we're probably going to need to have some big guns.
That's right, yeah.
Because if there's intelligence, then there's ambition. And if there's ambition, then there's hierarchy.
Damn. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. We're keeping it short today, but I hope to speak to you again real soon.
Well, thanks. It was I'm delighted to hear.
This is the first.
I hope you got what you wanted.
I did. This is the first, but not the last. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's great, Daniel. Well, you take care.
All right. Bye bye. See you, Harry.
Ciao.